You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is Football Social Daily, Premier League podcast.
Manchester United are marching towards Wembley. A comprehensive semi-final first leg win over Forest last night means that they are all but in the Carabao Cup final. But will it be black and white or red and white joining them in that showpiece under the arch? Newcastle United saw off Southampton in their first leg. That tie is far from over. We'll dive into the last four of the League Cup on today's show. And silverware couldn't be further away right now if you're an Everton supporter. In the relegation zone, a deal hijacked by Spurs when it was all but done, and now the owner putting the club up for sale. Mashiri has overseen madness at Goodison, and that's relative calm in comparison when it comes to the questions you've sent in to us, which we'll tackle on today's show. This is Football Social Daily, a Premier League podcast from the Sport Social team. Hit subscribe now, and that way you won't miss an episode. Next week, we'll be speaking to former Premier League player Matt Jarvis, and this week, we've been talking to Manchester United legend Brian McClair. Just scroll back in the timeline to hear our chat with Brian, where he discusses Eric Cantona, Sir Alex Ferguson, David Beckham, and a host more. Make sure you do that. And we've got another Manchester United legend on the way very, very soon, which we'll tell you about before too long. My name's Niall, and joining me in the studio today, Joel Tudor, Marley Anderson. Morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning, boys.
Feeling good, Joel? I can smell the silverware.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's quite poetic.
If everyone remembers the bet me and Jim did, that he thought Newcastle were going to win a trophy before Manchester United, and now we're going to find out in just 3 weeks' time, which is quite crazy.
By the 26th of February,
saving up, Joel, you know, you're going to pay Jim a tenner.
You could see whether that tenner goes to charity of Jim's choice or Joel's choice. I don't think Marley cares as long as Newcastle end up winning the silverware.
Both
but we'll
men's
see.
Chosen charities are my back pocket, so I'll take that.
I'll choose one in Newcastle just to soften the blow.
Choose the Bobby Robson Foundation if you want to keep your legs, because if we lose that final... If we get to the final and then we lose final, I'm going to come in and just boot you in the knee.
We'll come on to the Carabao Cup in a second, but we should mention that later on in the podcast, we'll be doing AQA, which stands for Any Questions Answered. You send in your questions to us on social media and we'll try our best to tackle them. I'll warn you ahead of time, lads, there is a question in there, which is, who needs a trophy more out of Manchester United and Newcastle? We'll come to that later on. But first, we're going to talk about the Carabao Cup semi-finals, starting with last night's game at the City Ground. Nottingham Forest hadn't been beaten at home in all competitions since mid-September. That was until Manchester United rolled into town for the first time in 24 years. A 3-0 win, comprehensive from Erik ten Hag's side. Just how impressive were they last night, Joel?
Yeah, I thought it was just a great reaction after that Arsenal game. Well, not just the Arsenal game, the Crystal Palace game as well, because it just felt like... Last week, the momentum was completely shot after 9 consecutive wins. I was thinking, well, what team is he going to go with? Is he going to go with a strong team? Is he going to field a much more weaker team with so many competitions coming up? But like you say, I think it was just a really comprehensive and professional performance where it could have easily gone the other way where, you know, you're going away to Nottingham Forest, the crowd are going to be massively on your back, especially considering it's a semi-final as well, two massive clubs. But I just thought the way in which they went about it, very controlled performance, obviously having Casemiro back as well, was just a huge positive. And it just was a one-way, it was one-way traffic from the very start, to be honest. And you have to, of course, again mention Marcus Rashford straight away after the sixth minute. Another goal from behind the halfway line where he just continues to carry it. You would never have seen that last year. And that shows you just how much confidence is in his game at the moment. And I think you have to give a lot of credit to Ten Hag as well for literally probably instilling the confidence in him, because it seems like it had been shot for the last 2 years. But I thought it was just the perfect scoreline as well, because like we know, there's a game every 3 days in February, which is not going to do any good to the squad because we don't have an incredible amount of squad depth. So the fact that at the return leg at Old Trafford, Ten Hag can probably play the likes of Palestri, the likes of Ilanga, and be pretty calm going into that is a massive bonus for us with the amount of competitions coming up, you know, against Barcelona and a lot of vital Premier League games. So it's just this perfect performance all around and result.
Average of a game every 3.5 days for the next 2 months for Manchester United. So
might need
anyone,
to call me up if they need any shortages.
Or maybe not that desperate, but anyone before the fixture who was suggesting, wow, Erik ten Hag's gone strong. I think that, first of all, Marley signifies how seriously he's taken this competition, because it could be United's first piece of silverware since 2017 and his first piece of silverware as Manchester United manager, should that be the case. And secondly, it's probably a good job they've got the job done in the first leg, because that means they can afford to rest players in what, as Joel says, is going to be a mental fixture schedule for them.
Yep, it couldn't have really gone much better, you know. I think as soon as Forrest got through, I think that was when Man United would have been sort of licking the lips, because straight away, the key for that game, for this sort of tie for me, was Henderson not playing for Nottingham Forest. And, you know, you see the two, the first two goals last night, I think Dean Henderson saves both of them. I think he stops Rashford's goal at the near post, and he pushes Anthony's shot out for a corner or out of danger and doesn't put it straight back into the path of Weghorst. So as soon as you get Wayne Hennessy in goal, you've got a decent chance of winning, I think. And obviously, they took the chances. Nice, easy game. There's no chance Forest are going to beat Man United 4-0 at Old Trafford, or 3-0 and take it to penalties. So they can field a few others, you know, Palestri, Garnacho.
Ilanga.
You know, Ilanga, a few defenders maybe. Phil Jones might get a game, you never know. Probably not.
But, on edge your bets on that, Marley.
Yeah, but you know, the job done, isn't it? It couldn't have gone much better for them, like I say. So on to hopefully what is a final we all want.
Well, what about Nottingham Forest just quickly? I thought they played quite well. They had an equaliser ruled out for offside. Right decision. They kept Casemiro quiet, which is a difficult thing to do. I thought Gibbs White and Johnson were both excellent, but very wasteful in front of goal. They had a number of shots, couldn't find the target. Two energetic players who just didn't have their finishing down on the night. Was there enough in that Forest performance, Joel, from your point of view, to suggest that they might stay up?
I mean, you would hope so, but then again, it's a semi-final of a cup. Obviously, the performance and the adrenaline is going to be a little bit more than just a bog standard, you know, away fixture against Fulham, for example, which requires a little bit more digging deep. But yeah, I thought, like you said, you know, Gibbs White gave Casemiro a real physical test all game, where they were both, it was a really good, interesting battle in the middle. It was also absolutely poetic after they got their offside goal and they replicated Ronaldo's celebration all for it to be offside in front of the United fans, which was perfect. But yeah, I think with Forest, with the amount of depth that they've got and the amount of signings that they've made, I think regardless of how they're doing form-wise, they've just got someone who could constantly come into the team and potentially give them that lift of quality, which I think a lot of other teams below them don't have at the moment, or they're in a little bit of disarray in terms of their form. So I think for Forest, encouraging signs, and I think the fans will be pleased also to not have an extra game as well, where it's going to potentially distract them as well.
Two debuts last night for Nottingham Forest, both in the midfield, Danilo and Scarpa, the two Brazilians coming into the side. And Joel's right, their form's pretty good. And in terms of me talking about them staying up, they are actually 13th in the Premier League at the moment on 21 points, which means that they are 4 points above the relegation zone. It looks like a decent gap at this point in time, albeit they're still 3 points away from 12th, the side above them, Crystal Palace. So it's very congested down there at the bottom of the Premier League table. Back to the Carabao Cup, though, as Marley says, Manchester United are probably favourites to go through and arguably win the competition. Your team went down to St Mary's to take on Southampton the day before yesterday, Marley, and it was attritional at times, I thought, for Newcastle, but they managed to find a goal, even though Joe Linton tried his very best not to find the back of the net for the Magpies. They managed to score. Southampton, I thought, were bright, though. I thought they gave Newcastle a good game from what I saw. Is that enough of an advantage for Newcastle over Southampton going into the second leg at St James's Park?
I think so, yeah. Obviously, it's not done, but you look at our home form in, well, throughout 2022, and I think we've only lost twice there in 2022, I think. I think that was to Man City and Liverpool as well. So, you know, we've not been beaten in a long time at home. I think to lose 2-0 on the verge of our first cup final in 23 years, I think it is, because it would be the 2000 FA Cup final, I would think, that was the last time we were in any sort of cup final. You know, that should be too much for Southampton. I think the atmosphere in the game would be enough to carry Newcastle through, and the talent as well between the two sides. I think you've got Southampton playing at the weekend in the FA Cup. We've got a full week off. We're a better team anyway, if everything's, you know, level playing field type of thing. Southampton is still struggling towards the bottom, still have bigger problems than getting to a Carabao Cup final, if we're being honest. So I do think we're the favourites. Gutted I didn't get a ticket, but I wasn't quite Charlie, what'd you call him? Charlie off the Chocolate Factory. That's what it's like getting Newcastle.
Charlie Bucket.
Yeah, Bucket, that's him. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Charlie Chaplin. I was like, what's he got to do with anything?
No, I was trying to think of the fat girl who eats everything. Sorry, the Bruce Bogtrotter, innit?
No, the... that's from Matilda.
Is that Matilda?
You're on about Augustus Gloop?
Yes.
Yeah. That's right. Him. I always get him mixed up.
I was thinking he's these characters.
Fat kid who eats cake, and Marley's got two options to choose from.
I was going to compare myself to him by trying to get a ticket, but I couldn't get a ticket for the second leg. But yeah, probably for the best, because I wouldn't have turned up to work the next day. So.
All right. Well, if anyone can sort Marley out of the ticket to St James's Park for the Southampton against Newcastle game in a week's time,
I'll give you my
let
house.
Us know if there's a house on the line for it for you, if you can sort him out.
The ref in that game was shocking.
The standard of refereeing this season, I think, across all divisions has been quite poor.
Yeah.
But we seem to say this every season.
Maybe I'm being harsh on the ref because, you know, the VAR made the mistake. I mean, Joe Linton's goal that got disallowed for handball, which clearly comes off his chest. Like, Joe Linton should have walked away from that game with a hat-trick and Newcastle with a 3-0 win, but obviously he misses one in the second half.
Terrible.
He has one disallowed in the first half, and then he scores in between the two of them. So it was one of them where it could have been better, but take 1-0 in the second leg, we should be enough to defend it and... not defend it, but, you know, not give it away sort of thing. So bring on the final.
It's the two Uniteds in commanding positions in the Carabao Cup semi-finals after the first legs have been completed. Forest losing 3-0 to Manchester United and Newcastle United going down to Southampton and beating them 1-0. The second legs, I think, take place next week, don't they? So we'll wait and see what happens there, just to confirm who is going to be on the path to Wembley on the 26th of February. Right, next up, we're going to be talking about a club who couldn't be more distant from silverware right now. It is all going on at Goodison Park. Everton Football Club is an absolute shambles right now, and we'll bring you up to date with the latest after this on Football Social Daily.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back. This is FSD, your Premier League podcast from the Sports Social team. I'm Niall. Joel and Marley are with me. Don't forget to hit subscribe. That way you don't miss an episode of this podcast again. New podcasts every single weekday. And on a Wednesday, an interview with a special guest, a former Premier League personality. And for the last couple of weeks, we've been chatting to Brian McClair, a Celtic and Manchester United legend who's been telling us some cracking stories. So just scroll back in the timeline to find that. And next week on the podcast, we'll be hearing from former Wolves and West Ham winger Matt Jarvis as well, so make sure you don't miss that one. Next up, though, we're going to talk about Everton because it's absolute madness at the moment. The last 24 hours, if it wasn't painful enough for an Everton fan, it's probably become even more painful as Arnaut Danjuma, the Villarreal winger who has all but agreed to arrive at Goodison Park this January window, has now gone to Tottenham Hotspur, another Premier League club, after Spurs hijacked the deal late in the day and Danjuma changed his mind and is now playing his football in North London for the rest of the season. That is just one of the things that happened yesterday. Another was that Farhad Moshiri, the club's owner, has allegedly placed the club on the market and it is now up for sale. Compound that with the fact they're in the relegation zone, Marley, and they don't have a manager. It's chaos at the moment at Goodison Park. I don't think anyone, let alone those inside the club, have a clue what's going on or how to solve it. Does it feel the same for you?
It does. It's Everton is a total bin fire of a club at the minute. They have just got everything wrong, haven't they? You know, their recruitment's been wrong. The manager's been wrong. The decisions from the board have been wrong. The tactics have been wrong. Everything just... And then it just is summed up perfectly by the fact that Danjuma is willing to leave Villarreal to come to Everton, even though he was one of the best players last season, had a bit of a slower start this season, but not exactly, you know, desperate to leave sort of thing. And he gets convinced by Everton, doesn't he? And then he says, I think he even said to Sky, I'll do everything I can to keep Everton in the Premier League. And literally 24 hours later, he's holding up a Spurs shirt. And it just sums everything up. Because they were probably thinking, we'll get Danjuma, we'll sell Anthony Gordon if we can, maybe to Newcastle. Don't get me started on that. But let's...
probably means that Gordon stays at Everton now.
Exactly, yeah. So that's through that plan into the bin, unless they think they can find another winger from somewhere that they can get. So yeah, and then you know, Moshiri gets questioned, Sax Lampard gets questioned about his desire to keep hold of the football club, and then you know that was at the weekend, and within 48 hours of that, he sacked Lampard and potentially, or allegedly, put the club on the market. But I was thinking last night, who's going to buy Everton right now? Like, if you think about Everton as a purchase, sort of, you know, what's it got going for them? No manager at the minute. Obviously, that'll change in the near future. But, you know, managerial uncertainty. New stadium on the way. Who pays for that? Unconfirmed league status. Are they going to be in the Premier League? Are they going to be in the Championship by the time the new owners come in? It's £500 million, which is way more than, you know, 200 million more than Newcastle, for example. And then you've got the other things, you know, the fan base. It's the second biggest club in the city, and they've got to overperform for the next 20 years to even get close to to turn that tide, to turn Liverpool from red to blue.
Yeah, yeah.
That takes 20 years of overperforming.
Well, just hold your thoughts on that, because there's a question later on in AQA from one of the listeners about which club would be worth more, Newcastle or Everton. So just hold your horses on that one for the time being, because Farhad Moshiri himself has said that the club isn't for sale, despite the report in the Guardian newspaper on Tuesday suggesting that the club is for sale. 500 million is the correct number, the correct figure, as Marley says. Moshiri says that he feels the pain of the fans and will do whatever it takes to win back their support. Do you believe him, Joel? Because I've heard Farhad Moshiri come out in quotes and say, I back Frank Lampard. I back the manager before that. I back the manager before that. And then, you know, it's normally the kiss of death. He comes out and says, I'm behind Frank Lampard, I'm backing him. They get a bad result against West Ham and he gives him the bullet. So I just wonder whether to take what Farhad Moshiri says with a pinch of salt. If it is up for sale or they are looking for fresh investment, is that the outcome the support has wanted?
I actually can empathise with him a little bit, and this will probably sound strange, but I feel like he's gone into this ownership so blindly in terms of the people he has around him, who's advising him. You know, you have Kia Jarabchian one of the biggest agents in football, almost like his right-hand man in the stands at Everton, which I know comes across awfully to Everton fans. And when you look at the amount of money that's been spent, he let go of Marcel Brands, who had a really good reputation before he came. He squandered hundreds and hundreds of millions at that club. That's not of Mascheri's business. He tried to hire a guy who's going to control the money for him, because you can't be in a Todd Bowley situation where your owner's going to go out and pay, you know, 200-300 million, and you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what the football scene is. That's why you hire the right people, like what Newcastle have done with Ashworth coming from Brighton. That's the right way to do it. With Everton, it feels like he doesn't understand what it takes to run a football club. And I feel like he's been so misguided. He's got so much misjudgment, and he's an intelligent guy. He's an amazing businessman. But football's a different game. As we've seen, you can't just throw 500 million at a club and expect to be like Galacticos and challenging for the top four or titles. You got to have the right people in place to start to build your club. And like Marley said, when you look at, for example, the fact that Newcastle went for 350 million not long ago, that was probably a good price considering you had amazing infrastructure, 50,000-seater stadium, huge fan base, and a team which, I know it's survived relegation, but it's ready to go on. With Everton, the stadium's falling apart. Who's going to pay for the new stadium when he comes in? Mm. I feel it's a little bit suspicious in the way all these clubs are getting put up for sale now. It feels like after that Chelsea moment where they realised how much investment is needed and how many people are prospective buyers, I think a lot of owners are realising now we don't have the money to take this era of football to the next level.
I mean, it was always on the cards, though. It was always on the cards that football will financially implode. It's just too top heavy. There's too much money in it. There's so much money to
the extent that Fenway, who own Liverpool, feel they can't invest anymore. So now, who's it going to go to? Who are the ultimate winners in this? The States. They're the only ones who can afford these clubs anymore.
Well, the United States.
Oh, the Nuclear Consortium. But I mean, the Emirates States or the Middle East, they're the only ones who can afford it now. Sure, you can't get a local businessman buying a club anymore who have the right intentions.
I mean, even Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who's been linked with buying Manchester United, should that club become available for purchase.
Mm.
You know, he's the wealthiest man in the country, I think. In the UK, he's the richest man in Britain, but yeah, he would probably still need
investment.
Get outbid
fast. So he's a good example, because he's had money to buy a football club for a lot of years. And which one did he go and buy? Nice in France, because it's cheap and it makes more business. Like, Nice is probably, I don't know what he bought Nice for example, but if it was 100 million, there's way more growth in Nice, because if you get them through into French, you know, the top four, the top three, or challenge PSG to a title, that is much more achievable than buying a club in the Premier League. And then it's either like, you've got to win the Premier League, you've got to win the Champions League.
You have to invest a stupid amount.
Exactly.
Always.
And you've got to spend $500 million to find out.
I also think the Chelsea thing's a great example, because it set a precedent of the value of football clubs. And we'll be talking about Everton, Newcastle, etc. in a bit later on in the podcast. Newcastle, 300 million. Chelsea, 2.5 billion, or whatever it was. It might have even been closer to four, I think, by the end. And the Manchester United owners, the Liverpool owners, will be looking at Chelsea, thinking, if Chelsea are worth four, we're worth five, six, seven. And then you start pricing people out. And then, as you say, the pool of people you can afford to buy clubs is very, very small.
Abramovich bought Chelsea for 140 million. That was a lot of money back then. It was 20 years ago. Yeah. Talk about inflation. Like, Chelsea, what were Chelsea when Abramovich bought them? Probably finishing eighth, ninth.
Well, I'd say sixth or fifth.
Yeah.
And they would win the occasional FA Cup. They won one, I think, 97, 2000. They won the FA Cup. So
who's that like buying now? I'd say maybe Spurs or Leicester, or maybe even Everton.
Yeah, probably.
Everton
under Moyes, when they were kind of in and around the Europa League places.
Yeah.
But
so let's compare Chelsea in 2003 to Everton now.
500 million.
You know, that's an inflation of £360 million.
Yeah.
And for £360 million, you could buy another club. You could buy Newcastle.
You could buy Newcastle, and you could buy, let me try and work this out.
How many
Portsmouths? 60 Portsmouths, maybe, something like that.
One Portsmouth, I think you'll agree, is enough.
It's more than enough. Listen, it's absolute carnage at Everton at the moment. Just to reconfirm, Farhad Mashiri, the owner of Everton, claims the club is not up for sale, but a newspaper report says it is. And just reading an article here on a website, it says that in an interview with the Everton Fan Advisory Board recorded before Saturday's defeat at West Ham and the dismissal of Lampard, Mashiri said he is only seeking to bring in extra finance in order to help fund the new stadium. The club is not for sale, but I've been talking to top investors of real quality to bridge a gap on the stadium. I can do it myself, but I want to bring top sport investors into Everton. We're close to having a deal done. It's not selling the club at all. It's just bringing more expertise in terms of global sponsorship and commercial development. And a lot of specialist sport investors have this pool of knowledge, and it's to secure that for Everton. If you're an investor, so
that's funny.
I could do it myself, right. But I want other people to do it. That's like me saying I'd love to buy.
He's admitting he doesn't know enough.
Hugo Boss suit, but I'd rather somebody else bought it for me.
He's finally admitting after all these years that he doesn't know enough about running a football club.
Yeah, but does he need investors or does he need advisors who know football?
Both.
I mean, if Al Khelaifi, PSG's owner, he's been on the record that he wants to invest in a club. Mm. I mean, is he looking to make Everton a more commercial brand, or does he actually want to see something good on the pitch?
But I mean,
go and get a good sporting director.
In terms of
that's what he needs.
Football finances, right? We know what happened to Arsenal, where they moved from Highbury to the Emirates Stadium, and Arsene Wenger, with pretty much the same squad for 3 or 4 years, had to keep Arsenal in the top four in order for them to be able to facilitate the funding of the building of a new stadium, right? Tottenham Hotspur, we know, weren't able to sign players under Pochettino because they were too busy putting their cash in towards this £1 billion Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Both stadiums, by the way, are incredible venues, and I'm sure Everton's new ground is going to be an incredible venue. But the difference is, those two clubs, although that they suffered on the pitch by putting finances towards the stadium, stayed in the Premier League. If Everton go down and they lose the Premier League money, I know they'll get parachute payments, but you know these things are always thought of in advance. How much of a damaging effect will that have on Mashiri, on the stadium, on Everton's ability to bounce back? You know, it's a massive investment to make to build a new stadium. Huge investment.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to stay in the Premier League as well. Otherwise, you're toast.
He made a mistake on that as well, because when Mashiri announced this stadium, he supposedly said that it was a price-capped stadium. It will not cost more than $1.5 billion, I think he said. And literally a few weeks ago, he said like, oh, it's actually going to cost 1.8 or 1.9 or something like that. And it was like, well, you know, it sounds like not a lot, like it's point of something. But that point, it's 400 grand. It's an extra...
400 million.
Huh?
400 million.
Oh, sorry, 400 million. Jesus Christ.
That would have been cheap.
I'm thick today, I mean, Christ. Yeah, but, you know, 400 million, where's... Again, you could buy another club for that. Yeah, it's staggering amounts of money, and... It just makes no sense. I think Everton have had this sort of thing of, you know, we can be a big boy. Like we can spend that. We'll do this, because if we spend that, we'll get further up the league. We'll get into Europe. Blah blah blah. And there's no guarantees. I say this all the time when we talk about ownership in football. Like there's just no guarantees. If one thing goes wrong, it leads to another thing. It's like a domino, and all of a sudden, Everton are staring relegation in the face and having to pay off $2 billion over the next 10 years and trying to come back out of probably the hardest league in the world to get out of to do that.
I believe now Everton needs to be a bit cruel to be kind with the club, which is get someone in like Sean Dyche who can save them from relegation.
So
I feel like they need Premier League status more than Newcastle needed it. The reason is they had the huge investment which will get them out of the Championship easy, no worries. They have Farhad Mashiri who's going to try and get them out of the Championship, and I don't believe he'd stick around if that was the case. So I feel in this scenario they need to be so safe, remain in the Premier League and then go on from there. But right now, if the next manager like Vitor Pereira, for example, I think they're finished in the Premier League. I think they're done.
It's such a shame for me to see what's happening to Everton, because they're a proper traditional club, and I'd be gutted if they got relegated from the Premier League. I know a lot of people aren't too bothered if they are or they aren't, but for me personally, I don't know why. I've always had a bit of a fondness for Everton. I have family members that support Everton and stuff like that, and it's just so sad to see what's happening at a great football club. I mean, they've had a lack of success for what it's been 25, 27 years or whatever since they last won an FA Cup or something like that. So you can't really, you know, expect them to be winning stuff, but they shouldn't be in the relegation zone. I mean, that's madness. But, you know, that is the Premier League. It's a brutal, ruthless league. And you've been sending in some questions, some of them to do with Everton, some of them to do with the changing fortunes at Newcastle United, and some to do with the rather middling Chelsea Football Club at the moment. We'll get on to those next here on Football Social Daily.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Final part of today's FSD. Welcome back to the show. And on a Thursday, we do something called AQA, which stands for Any Questions Answered, All Questions Answered, whatever you want to call it. Just send your messages into us via social media.
As long as it fits the, yeah.
Anything that has an A, Q and A and the middle word is question, then it doesn't matter. But get them into us on social media. At FSDpod is the Twitter handle. You can get in touch with us there.
Avocado,
send your questions,
questions
in.
Answered.
What's that?
Avocado questions
Any
answered.
Questions about avocados, yep. We'll happily answer them. Aberdeen, if you're an Aberdeen fan, still reeling from the loss to Darvel, let us know. Aberdeen questions answered. But no, any questions answered, and they all come from you. And the first one we're going to tackle today comes from Paul, and this is the question I discussed with you guys earlier on in the show. Who needs a trophy more, Manchester United or Newcastle United? I think we should do this like a the gloves are off style boxing promo, and we'll come to you first, Joel. Turn your chair around and sit on the back of it like they do.
Get a bit of water, right? Just in case. Get a bit of water just in case I need to dash it out.
All right, round one. Joel.
If it wasn't a swivel chair, I think he'd do it.
I'm going to wrap him round.
You're going to look worse.
Right, who needs a trophy more, Manchester United or Newcastle United? I'll let you argue the case for your club, Joel.
Yeah, I think in terms of just going to the next level and in terms of the team believing again, I think that a trophy is just absolutely crucial, because I know Newcastle's wait for a trophy has been a lot longer, and that's probably why they maybe have a little bit more of an argument than us. But it's the fact that it's 6 years to not win a title or anything full stop is a long time for a club like Manchester United. And I think for this club to then go on and do big things like win a Premier League, win a Champions League, you always have to start with a foundation. I mean, look at Arsenal at the moment. They started with an FA Cup. I know they didn't do great after that, but now they're going on to bigger and better things. And I always think a foundation is necessary in terms of getting that winning mentality. So I think in terms of instilling belief in the club again, this or the FA Cup or the Europa League, just a trophy is something just as a springboard to go. And I think it's just massively necessary for us, because I think next season is going to be one where we're going to be punching really above our weight, I think.
All right. Marley, your turn.
Just like Marley
punch
is
back.
Now.
Joel makes a good point, but why did Newcastle United need a trophy more than Manchester United?
We need a trophy more because we don't know what one looks like. you know, we haven't won anything since 1969. That was the Fairs Cup, which then became the UEFA Cup and then the Europa League. We got to two FA Cup finals in 99 and 2000, got beat by Man United in one, Arsenal in the other.
Oh, retribution.
Very
then,
tasty.
Possibly.
Yeah. We could have stopped them doing the treble, but we didn't.
Pompey did.
Portsmouth, yeah.
Yeah, Portsmouth did that as well a few years later, yeah. But no, I think this is a straightforward argument. I think this is Newcastle need this more than Man United because of that reason, and because of the new era. You need silverware sooner rather than later, but at some point soon, because you know, if you go 5 years down the line and the new regime has not won anything, you get all the clickbait journals going, oh well, you know, they've spent all this money and you've not done anything. You've not actually won anything and all this. But if you get something way sooner than everyone expected. Like if you said to me, you'll win a Carabao Cup 3 years after your investment, I'd have said, brilliant.
Yeah. It's going to come though, isn't it? I mean,
that's what I say. I feel
it's
like you're fast tracked.
Like, what's
that's
another
what
year?
Needs
exactly.
to be now.
You've waited 50 odd, 60 years, whatever it is. Yeah. What's another year for Newcastle fans waiting?
Exactly.
Because like, the football's so much better than it was.
My mum was born in the year we last won a trophy. And unfortunately, I'm not counting the Intertoto Cup of 2006.
Which is ridiculous for a club like Newcastle United, isn't it? It's ridiculous. You know, they should have been more successful. And like you say, in the 90s, you reached some cup finals and stuff and got beaten by Manchester United. And yeah, I think it's a really interesting debate.
As well. So there's history there. 1996 season, you know, blew a 12-point lead with seven games to go, something like that, whatever it
Kevin
was.
Kevin Keegan. Veins popping out of his head.
Yeah, I would love it if we beat them and all that sort
brilliant.
Of stuff.
Absolutely,
you know?
Brilliant. Iconic Premier League moment. Great question, Paul. I'm sure we'll find out the answer before too long. As long as Marley's mob go and beat them lot from St. Mary's and don't bottle it, I swear to God. Do not bottle it, Newcastle.
Otherwise,
like,
all this talk's out the window.
Please, otherwise the tenor will be going to Joel. The tenor will be going to Joel's charity of choice.
A month today, we might find out.
We will find out indeed. Right, talking about Newcastle... We're also going to talk about Everton, as we already have done on today's podcast, by virtue of Daz's question. And he says, if Everton is allegedly worth £500 million, was Newcastle United underpriced at £300 million? Are they similar size clubs?
I mean, in terms of what they've won, Everton's a clear winner, isn't it, in terms of their titles?
In the last 50 years, yeah.
So if you're going off that, then, okay, that's fine. But then I contradict myself because I'm a Manchester United fan. Liverpool have more official titles than us in terms of altogether. So I don't want to go down that road.
But is it about titles?
No,
I think
it's everything in general. I mean, Newcastle, when
right
you look
now,
at...
Right now, Newcastle are in the top four race and Everton are in the relegation zone. They've got a new stadium. They could be in the Championship next season.
Yeah, but that's very, very current, isn't it? I mean, you have to look at it as a whole. Newcastle have got, you know, the stadium, which is a huge factor, a huge fan base. So have Everton, though. I feel like Everton are just lagging behind in terms of the modern times. I think Newcastle are way, way more up to speed. It's easy for us to sway our opinion because they've been taken over and because they're in the top four and because they're on the way up and Everton are like on the brink of catastrophe. I feel like it's a little bit easy for us to say, oh, Newcastle are bigger. But in terms of more history and historic club, I feel like Everton for sure.
Yeah.
Way before our time, of course. I don't know the true extent of how it was to be,
never,
you know, an Everton
relegated
fan in the 80s and 70s.
In
I'm
70
sure it's
years
incredible.
Or something, they've never been relegated.
Right. So, I mean, that's history. It's historic.
That's not a flex, by the way. This whole thing, they've never been relegated in the Premier League, is just such a poor thing. It's like saying a boxer's never been knocked out, but if you've lost 12 times in 15 fights, you're still crap.
Still got a chin, though.
Do you think, I've not been knocked out.
Do you think Newcastle are a bigger club than Everton?
Say again?
Do you think Newcastle are a bigger club than Everton?
Of course I do, yeah.
Is that because you're a Newcastle fan?
Well, probably.
Do you genuinely...
Probably, but when... You often get this...
Who's bigger than who debate.
Yeah. And sometimes it happens with, you know, Aston Villa and Everton, Aston Villa and Newcastle and, you know, Chelsea and Arsenal or Chelsea and Tottenham, whatever.
We've won a Champions League and you haven't, you know, that sort of thing.
But for me, I think the bigger club comes down to global reach and fan base. And for me, the clearest argument I can give you on this is if you walk through Newcastle, and you pick 10 people off the street and say, who do you support? 9 of them support Newcastle. And one of them's lost and has gone from Sunderland for a day out. If you walk through Liverpool and you ask 10 people, you pick them off the street, I'd say probably 7 support Liverpool and 3 support Everton. If you can't be the biggest team in your city, you can't, for me, be bigger as a club and as an investment than a team which is a one-club city. That's why Leeds are so big. That's when Newcastle have got the fan base they have.
Yeah, but isn't that a bit unfair because you're rivaling Sunderland and they're rivaling Liverpool, one of the most successful teams in football.
Right, but that still makes them a smaller club, in the grand scheme of things. If you can't be the best in your city,
in terms of football tourism, the amount of people that go to Liverpool, not just to watch Liverpool, but to watch Premier League football as a whole, because that's kind of the way the game's going, isn't it? You get tourist fans who go to Liverpool to watch either an Everton or our Liverpool game.
Yeah.
I think that there's probably a lot of people that have been to an Everton match on that basis. I think that there's probably an element of that. I'd say that happens more than Newcastle. So I'd say that in terms of global fan base, I'd say that there's an argument to suggest Everton have as many fans as Newcastle, but the Newcastle support base is far more loyal when you boil it down to the core. There's far more loyal Geordies than there is Evertonians in the city of Liverpool,
really,
which is, I guess, I think so, yeah. I think there's more people, as Marley said, in Newcastle that support Newcastle than in Liverpool that support Everton. I think there is.
I mean, I think it's hard to say that, though, because when you're in the area where Everton are, I mean, it's the most passionate fans I think I've ever seen in my life.
100%, but what's that to do with the value of the club?
Is Stanley Park, which separates the pair of them.
There's more Nottingham Forest fans than there is Notts County fans. And Notts County have a brilliant stadium, Meadow Lane. It's 25,000 seats, beautiful little ground, traditional old football ground, oldest professional club in the world. Nottingham Forest are still the bigger club, and it's not even close. And Notts County have a great stadium.
I mean, the two Champions Leagues help.
Absolutely. But I suppose the point is, this conversation, we're talking about value of the football clubs. What is value now to an investor?
Growth.
But Everton have got a new stadium on the way.
But, like I said before, for Everton to be the team, they've first got to be the team in their city. Like, they have to overshadow Liverpool. And Liverpool have had, you know, Joel mentioned before, more trophies than anyone. And it's still the most successful English team in history. So how can you grow as a bigger... Like, if you can't be bigger than Liverpool, it's going to take 20 years of Everton finishing above Liverpool and winning trophies before the next generation come through and go, well, Everton the best team in... Like, our kids, for example, would be arguing that Everton would be better than Liverpool at the earliest. Maybe our grandkids. And that's if Everton outperform Liverpool for the next 20 years. Because that's how long it's going to take to shift perception. Who's the best team in Liverpool
I hate these sorts of questions, though. What's more
so
valuable?
Then are Tottenham bigger than Newcastle? Or Newcastle, because Tottenham aren't the bigger than Arsenal.
What? Hang on, what? So, like, yeah, they're not bigger than Arsenal.
Are they bigger than Newcastle?
Don't know. It's a debate.
Because they're not bigger in the city, but I would say they probably are.
London, on what the basis? Commercial value.
Yeah, the brand, the way in which they have been in the last 15 years to current times.
Tottenham's a bigger brand than Newcastle. Are they a bigger
But then
club?
They're very, very far behind Arsenal, massively far behind Arsenal.
But I think this is the thing. I mean, this is why it's such a horrible question.
I don't think there's much between Newcastle and Tottenham, personally.
I think it's such a horrible question because it's very subjective. Because
in
this country, in my opinion, if you asked British football fans, Tottenham would be considered a bigger club than Newcastle. And also, if you go, probably be more level. If you go abroad and you asked, I don't know, 100 Asian fans, name 5 Premier League clubs, Tottenham would crop up more times than Newcastle United would, I think, personally. But then again, what is the debate? You know, who's
it's a different quota, though,
Asia?
Is it? That's a
it's
different
ridiculous.
Quota. You can do it on so many different quotas, can't you?
Value is based on assets and all sorts of stuff. It's a horrible, horrible question. So nice one, Daz, for descending Football Social Daily into absolute chaos today. So we're going to end up with a nicer question. This one's from Jess. I think, did you get in touch last week as well, Jess? Chelsea signed Mo Salah 9 years ago this transfer window. Do they regret selling Salah and De Bruyne, etc., or are they okay with it as they've still been successful in the time since then? For example, Chelsea have won the same amount of Champions Leagues as Manchester City and Liverpool in the time since they sold Salah. Really good question. Makes you think, because we always talk, Joel, don't we, about Chelsea and the ones that got away. I mean, Lukaku left Chelsea without really having a chance, came back, and obviously it was a disaster. But in the meantime, between him leaving and coming back, scored a load of goals. De Bruyne goes and becomes the best player on the planet for a period, you know, after leaving Chelsea. Mo Salah, one of the best imports from Africa, if not the best, that the Premier League has ever seen, and an unbelievable player, all used to play for Chelsea. But Jess is right. Chelsea won the Champions League. Liverpool have won one Champions League with Mo Salah since then. Manchester City have won no Champions League since then, including Kevin De Bruyne being there. So will Chelsea fans kind of shrug and be like, that's cool, we're not bothered?
Under the Roman Abramovich era, no one was ever a loss going out of the club. That's like the bottom line, because that was what the model was built on. They've lost some incredible managers. Well, not lost, they sacked incredible managers. They let go of incredible players. Obviously, hindsight is the most beautiful thing in life, isn't it? Because when you look back, you can see who was the greatest and who wasn't. And I'm sure, you know, when Salah and De Bruyne were there, they just weren't ready. And Chelsea at that time, under Abramovich, they didn't have the time to wait for these players. When you're trying to win titles, the managers had so much pressure from above, knowing that if they didn't produce in that season, they were gone. They didn't have time to blood in the likes of Salah and De Bruyne and a young Lukaku, because there was a more glitzy, glamorous, you know, the likes of Shevchenko in that kind of mold, or there was the likes of Balak on a free, you know, these kind of ones that were easily bought instead of reigning through young talent. And that was the way it was under the Abramovich era. And the bottom line was, it was a success because, like she said, they won another Champions League after that. They won. They had an amazing season with Antonio Conte when they were the first Premier League team to get 30 wins in a season. Mm. And obviously, that's been eclipsed now. But I mean, these are just examples of the success. So you can't really say it was a failure because, I mean, yeah, it's easy to say now that they've gone on to do better things. But yeah, who's to say they would have done that at Chelsea? I don't think so.
And both players went off to other clubs, didn't they? As you say, you know, Salah went off to Roma.
Fiorentina before that.
And De Bruyne went off to Wolfsburg and came back, and they were excellent players. And even De Bruyne was being written off on Sky Sports, that famous quote from, you know, all of the Sky Sports lot with Jeff Stelling about, you know, 50 million for this lad, he can't be worth it, you know, and Kevin De Bruyne.
There's a record at the time.
It's proven them all wrong. But I think that is an important point because, yes, it's 9 years, this window since Chelsea bought Mo Salah and it didn't work. But during that time, Chelsea had Eden Hazard, Marley, who was one of the best players in the league and helped them win a couple of titles. So at that point, it wasn't a mistake by Chelsea. So it's one of those things where, you know, how long does a player have to be away for and come back before it's considered a mistake by a club? These things are always judgmental.
Mm. I think there's a lot of players who needed to move to become the player they are now. It's often said to me that, you know, Newcastle should never have sold Ivan Toney for 400 grand to was it Northampton Town? I think we sold him to. And my argument back is he would never have got the games and been the player he is if he'd stayed at Newcastle because he wasn't in the team. The difference between an argument like that and an argument like the De Bruyne and Salah things is they already had potential. That's why Chelsea signed him in the first place.
Yeah.
But they weren't moved. They weren't given the chance. They weren't put in the team and put in the best position and all that type of stuff. And there is proof in their careers since that they've gone on to be that player. So I think all they needed at that time was a chance. Mm. And I don't think they got enough of a chance. Remember, Chelsea had a lot of players at the time.
Yeah.
But they've always had a lot of players, haven't they, really? But yeah,
but for every Salah and De Bruyne, there's an Oriol Romeo who's just a steady Premier League player for a few years. Ryan Bertrand.
Yeah.
You know, but Marco Marin, I can think of loads of them.
And there wasn't any signs with those two when they first played. They were decent, but they just went on to another level, like you said. It's like Pogba, for example. Perfect example. If he stayed at United, he probably wouldn't have become what he is or what he was.
Mm. Maybe, but
you never know.
There could have been with the right coaching. Think about it. Like, they went away. Like, De Bruyne went away. Where did he go? Wolfsburg,
yeah.
Got a chance. Built the team around him. Right, you're in the team.
They won the Bundesliga.
You're in the team every week, lad. Right. What he set up? Who was up front for them? Was it Weghorst at the time, or was it so whoever it was? You know, he'll provide you the goals. He's good enough. So if you give someone that belief, then they become the player. Obviously, it takes a big risk when at a club like Chelsea to put like a 22-year-old De Bruyne in there and say, right, he's our new man. When you've got Lampard and you've got Balak and all these sort of players, it is a big risk. But the proof is there that if he was given that chance, he could have been this player that he is now. Might have been even better. Think about playing in a team as good as Chelsea from, you know, for the last 10, 12 years. Like, it's scary, really. But they spent the money on him. They just didn't give him the chance. They clearly knew there was a player there, but didn't give him a chance. So it's sliding doors moments, isn't it, of players' careers.
I'll give you a fiver if you can guess the front three for Wolfsburg that season. They finished second in the Bundesliga, 14-15 season. I presume to Bayern Munich.
Kevin De Bruyne pulling the strings. De Bruyne is obviously not in it. Oh, was it Claudio Pizarro?
It wasn't. De Bruyne was one of the midfield players.
Bastos. That's who I was thinking of when I said Weghorst.
I remember the lanky guy.
Bastos. And can you name the other two players?
Is it André Schürrle?
André Schürrle, yeah.
Is there one more?
There is.
One.
What is
you've got one guess.
It's not Chalaglu, is it?
It's not. I don't actually have a fiver on me, so.
Is it Michael Marin?
Oh, wow.
It's not. It's Nicholas Bentner.
No, Jesus.
Hey, I got the Bentner. Third. Hey, that three, I don't know where I digged out in the depths of my mind there.
Wow. Done well there. Naldo was in the squad.
Naldo, big lad.
And Tim Close was the defensive centre-half. Went to Norwich, didn't he?
Norwich, yeah.
So, Perisic was in the team as well.
Great team, that as well.
Ivan Perisic was in the team.
Good team, that.
Yeah, really good team. Finished second in the Bundesliga, and Kevin De Bruyne, of course, has gone on to amazing things. Great question, Jess. Love when you send your questions in to us on a Thursday, guys. Keep doing it. We appreciate your support as ever. Follow us on social media at FSDpod. That's the place to send in the questions. And if you like the podcast, then please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you get your podcasts. A lovely little 5-star review. We always love hearing from you wherever you're listening to the show in the world. So make sure you hit subscribe, and that way you won't miss any further episodes, including any of the ones we've got with Premier League players. They are worth listening to, including the latest one with Brian McClair. We've got Matt Jarvis coming up next week. We've got another Manchester United legend in the pipeline, someone who won the Premier League with Leicester City. So we've got some good stuff coming up for you, so make sure you don't miss it. But from Joel Marley and I, that is it. We'll catch you next time on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily is a VoiceWorks sport production for the Sports Social Podcast Network.